November 9th, 2021. Welcome to the Stu Peters Show. My name is Stu Peters. If any poor, unfortunate soul represents the way that our leaders have misled and lied to us, it's 13-year-old Maddie DeGray. Maddie's mother, Stephanie, was a Biden voter last fall. She was a complete believer in these vaccines, so much so that she volunteered her daughter for a Pfizer vaccine trial. But something went horribly wrong. Shortly after her second shot in January, Maddie's health fell apart. She suffered from an erratic pulse, muscle spasms, headaches, has lost her ability to walk or even cough properly. She's been confined to a wheelchair and has had to use a feeding tube. She's been repeatedly hospitalized. The pain, we are told, is often excruciating. But instead of admitting that the vaccine is at fault, doctors have blamed Maddie's illness on conversion disorder, which is just the modern name for the old illness of hysteria. They think that Maddie's illness, the one that has her in a wheelchair and on a feeding tube, is all in her head. Maddie never suffered from anxiety until they stuck this shot in her arm, but now the doctors say that it must be anxiety that's leaving her unable to walk. Stephanie DeGray just wants health authorities and the Biden administration to acknowledge what happened to her daughter. But they don't need Stephanie anymore. They got her vote, which is all they wanted. Now she's useless to them. To quote Courtney Bennett of the Mayo Clinic, their attitude may as well just be, please go and die. They need Maddie out of the way. Because right now, the Biden regime is racing ahead with Operation Shots in Arms. The FDA just approved emergency vaccines for children ages 5 to 11. And you better believe they're going to be sticking needles in newborns as soon as they can. They don't want a personally disabled young girl called Maddie ruining their plans, or in Pfizer's case, their profit margins. Stephanie has tried to commission a television commercial about her daughter's suffering. It was supposed to air during Saturday Night Live and then meet the press the following day. The ad was a direct personal plea to Joe Biden. Comcast initially accepted it, but then Comcast retracted that acceptance. Comcast said the ad's contents were too graphic. And at the same time, they said that Stephanie's claims about her own daughter, Maddie, were unsubstantiated, despite Stephanie submitting complete medical records. So that's the hell that Maddie is living through right now. She got an experimental shot because powerful people lied to her family and said it was definitely safe. Now she's suffering and they just want her silenced, disappeared, put away. And of course, Stephanie has no hope of suing Pfizer for what happened to her daughter. Congress made sure of that last year when it gave them blanket immunity from the side effects of this vaccine. Well, we won't silence them. Stephanie and Maddie are in their vehicle at the hospital and they join us now. Both of you, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate this. So what do you want to tell the world? What were your hopes with the commercial? What is it that you hope this appearance will help to do?
To get the government's attention that something did go wrong during the trials with the vaccine, and to warn other parents that, you know, I'm not trying to, everybody has their own opinion and choice. Well, for now, they can make their choice, but I feel like people are not being given informed consent. They're not, because this, what happened to Maddie was not put in the EUA. For children, the details were not put in there. It was pretty much brushed off as a stomach ache, and it is not a stomach ache. We're in one of the children's hospitals, not the one where the trial was held, because we've moved all of our care out of there. But we're at another children's hospital doing a gastric emptying study, and it's not normal. We're here way longer than we were supposed to be. So we've been here since 8 a.m. It's 12. Still, not normal.
What you're going through is absolutely unfathomable. I'm a father, so I can't imagine the pain that you're feeling. But does the pain come more from the fact that they're trying to tell you or convince you or lie to the public and say that this is all in your daughter's head?
I mean, that is very frustrating. I mean, it's painful to watch her be in pain. But the fact that they're lying and trying to hide it is like, it makes my blood boil. That's the best way I can describe it. It just, and that it's happening to other kids. Like, there's other parents that I'm connected to. It's not just Maddie, and it's going to be more kids. And those are only the people that we've been able to connect with. You know, a lot of people aren't speaking up because they're afraid to, and I don't blame them.
We're watching the numbers in the vaccine adverse events reporting system just absolutely skyrocket. And so we know that Maddie is not alone. Do you feel that if the media wouldn't silence you and wouldn't suppress you, and that you would have been able to early on be out in the wide open in the public as your First Amendment is supposed to allow for, rather than being censored and silenced, do you feel like her story, that what she's going through, may not have been in vain?
Yes. People would have known. They couldn't have ignored it if it was out there everywhere. I mean, it's being silenced by everything, by social media, by mainstream media. I mean, even if you Google her name, you can see it when it's happening, where it's like they're pushing down, because I have to Google it to make sure nothing bad's out there on her name. So that's why I do it. But you can just, I didn't even realize that anything like this could happen. I didn't. It's this is stuff in movies. It's not stuff that happens in real life, especially the one that I'm living in, my daughter.
So how long after the shot did Maddie start to experience these adverse reactions? And take us kind of through that. What exactly is it that she's experiencing? I know I touched on it briefly, but you're there. You're her mother. Yeah. You see it every day.
So when she first got, it was with her second dose. She had a typical reaction with her first dose. The second dose, she had said immediately, she's like, that hurt way more than the first one. She's like, it wasn't like that. So that was one weird thing, but we kind of brushed it off, like maybe she tensed up or something. So not worried. And then in the middle of the night, she came into our room and said, I don't feel right. There's something wrong. Can I sleep in here? And so she did. And then the next morning we said, hey, you don't have to go to school. She wanted to go. She hates missing school because then you have to make up the work. So she somehow managed to push through school. By the time she got home, she was a mess. Her fingers and toes were white and ice cold. She had excruciating pain in her lower right abdomen to the point where she was like hunched over. Her back, she couldn't even lay on her back because it was like electric shocks going up and down it. It hurt to even touch it. My husband had called me at work because he works from home. He called me and he said, Maddie's having some type of adverse reaction. I hear it in the background. She's like, Mom, Mom, my heart feels like it's being ripped up through my neck. Like I can't get that out of my head. So she had a fever. She just not in good shape. I mean, it was bad. And so by the time I got home, the trial, whenever you are logging adverse reactions, it's only solicited events. Like you can't, there's no free form, by the way, I don't think people realize this, to log what's happening. Like if it's outside of the things they're soliciting, which are like not very serious things, like normal throwing up, did you have, you know, a rash, was it swollen? Nothing like what happened to her. So we called the trial doctor, that's what you're supposed to do. And then they told us to go into the ER. They said it would be best if you go to Cincinnati Children's, because then we can, that's where the trial was held, because then we have access to the records and we can, it's, you know, then we're able to compensate for the medical costs, you know. So we did, and she didn't have appendicitis. They gave her an IV, Toradol, and anti-nausea. I think that's it. They did an x-ray to see if there was appendicitis and the renal profile. And that was it. And sent her home saying, you know, it'll get better. And it didn't get better and just continued to get worse. So she's went to the ER 9 times, I think it was. And then she had been admitted to the hospital 3 times for a total of 2 months. And we're still going to doctor's appointments. They didn't investigate, like, why are we just now having a gastric emptying study? Why did they never look at that? This is a problem, you know, like they didn't try. It was brushed off early on, like you said, as the conversion disorder, the functional neurologic disorder with anxiety. So it's,
Is that false? I mean, clearly, you don't believe that.
No, no. And you know what? In the beginning, they had us convinced. We were desperate to the point where we were like, okay, well, maybe it is. Even though she never had anxiety before, we're like, well, you know, what happened to her made her, and it was not anxiety, but it was like, I don't know how. And after talking to other people that have been through this, it's that they're like, it's like your body feels like it's, I don't know how to describe it, because I haven't experienced it, but they said it's different. It's like you just are, it's like an uneasy feeling, not anxiety, where typical what you would think of it, anxiety. First of all, she would have had it before. She didn't have it before. It was not in her charts. I have proof. Nowhere in her charts. It was put into her charts by Cincinnati Children's and I think it was March. She had the second vaccine January 20th. So
the commercial that you were going to do that was shot down by Comcast was a direct plea to Joe Biden.
Yes.
That wasn't allowed by Comcast, but we are going to allow it here. What is your direct plea to the president?
My plea is to stop giving this. I mean, stop giving this to kids, you know, stop. They don't need it. And I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to speak out of context, but it's harming kids more than it's helping them.
Well, there are plenty of studies to support that. Go ahead. Yes. You work.
No, I work in an elementary school, so I see this day to day. No.
In the school where you work, are they going to mandate this shot in order to have in-person learning?
I don't know. I mean, I have no clue.
Have you spoken to them? Have you advocated against that?
For me, I know what I'm not going to do. They know my situation. It's really not. It's whatever happens there. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, I won't get the vaccine. I won't, because I can't risk not being able to take care of Maddie.
And what about for the kids, in order for them to be participating in in-person learning, if they get to the point where they're going to mandate that there, will you adamantly fight against it?
For my kids?
Yes. For the kids in your class, for the kids at that school?
For that, I feel like it's not my position. I'm an educational aide. I work with special ed. I'm not a teacher there. So I just don't feel like it's my position. I'm advocating overall for all kids, not specifically my school. Now, when it comes to my kids, will I advocate at their school? Yes, because that's my business, if that makes sense. I'm advocating for all kids, not just the ones in my school. And I know that there's different situations where maybe kids are high risk and it does make sense, but they have not done enough research to figure that out. You know, they haven't.
Yeah, they've done virtually none at all.
They've done none. They've done nothing to look at, you know, a 12-year-old. You know, that's a time in your life when you're like, starting to become an adult. You're not an adult yet. You know, they gave her an adult version, the dose. That's a 12-year-old getting an adult dose.
So now at this point in her treatment, are they starting to admit now that this is as a result of this Pfizer shot that she took, or are they still adamantly, vehemently denying that?
They're denying it. Yeah, I mean, we moved all of her care out of Cincinnati Children's. They had control of everything. That's where the trial was held. That's where the trial doctor, Dr. Frank, works. The principal investigator who gets to say whether it was from the vaccine or not.
Why do you think this is? I mean, you're firsthand dealing with this. We have speculated about this. We have reported on these cover-ups and the suppression of this information. Why do you think that they're covering this up? Is it for profit? Is it for something more diabolical?
It's either got to be for profit, or I don't know what anything else it could be for. It just, nothing else makes sense because there's nothing to prove that the vaccines work. People are getting COVID when they have the vaccine. People are getting hospitalized in the ICU when they have the vaccine. It happened to my brother-in-law. It's they're not looking at all at people that have natural immunity. They're not even looking at it. It's like, it doesn't matter if you had COVID and you might be have natural immunity. We're not even going to check that. That's not even something that matters.
Well, like, we are going to be praying for you, for your family, for Maddie, and for all of the children in this country and around the world that are being led to this shot and not given an opportunity to make a chance after their a choice after their own health or their parents. And what you're going through is just, I'm really sorry. I'm very sorry. When I was listening to you talk, it was hard not to overtly tear up. I take this very personally because I'm a father. And I think a lot of our viewers also will feel those emotions. I've got about a minute left here, Stephanie. What are your final words?
I just do your research. It's do your research. You're not getting informed consent from the doctors. You're not. You are not. Take that into consideration when you choose to do what you do for your child or for yourself.
Well, I know that Maddie is not feeling well, and I know that she can hear me. And I'll be praying for you, Maddie, and stay strong throughout this. And you're a hero for allowing this to take place and for coming forward like this. I don't know how many lives you could have saved today, but if you can save just one, we think it's worth it. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you.
Well, Pfizer and Moderna have brilliantly figured out that the Zelenko protocol is and always has been the correct approach to treat COVID-19. They're releasing results from repurposed HIV drugs now, claiming a decrease in hospitalization rates of 89% and 50% respectively. Well, this is consistent with Dr. Zelenko's observations since March of 2020 that early treatment with antiviral medications reduces hospitalization and death by 84%. Dozens of peer-reviewed papers have corroborated Dr. Z's observations with an average decrease in hospitalization of 85%. Now, Pfizer and Moderna still have not discovered the clinical benefit of patient risk stratification and use of zinc, which are essential components of the Zelenko protocol. Pfizer and Moderna have not commented on the significant side effects of the repurposed HIV drugs. Another major difference of Pfizer and Moderna drugs versus the Zelenko protocol is cost. Big pharma drugs will cost $700 a person versus $30 for the Zelenko protocol. Perhaps Pfizer and Moderna are hoping that touting their expensive and unproven drugs will mitigate the horrendous side effects of the COVID-19 vaccines. Go to ZStockProtocol.com right now. Just do the common sense deal. Dr. Zelenko is a Nobel Prize nominee, Presidential Medal of Freedom nominee. He saved thousands of lives in upstate New York, and he makes a one-pill formula available for you. Don't shed on me, bro. Protect yourself from influenza. Protect your kids with gummies that are now available for pre-order. Put this stuff on auto-ship and protect yourself. Go to ZStackProtocol.com right now. ZStackProtocol.com. Well, Karen Kingston is a former pharmaceutical employee, Pfizer to be specific. She's currently a biotech analyst. We've had her on this show a few times to discuss different vaccine red flags. Well, today Karen says that she has new documents that show that the FDA has stepped in to remove patients experiencing adverse reactions from the vaccine data so that they can conceal how common side effects actually are. And Karen Kingston is here with those receipts. So how extensive is the fraud that we've all suspected that you have now discovered?
It's criminal. It's that extensive that it is absolutely criminal. This is conspiring to commit aggravated assault against minors and adults in America. There's no gray area anymore. So, I looked into the data again when on November 2nd, just last week, the British Medical Journal put out a study where they announced that they had a whistleblower. Her name is Brooke Jackson, and she works for Vantavia. And that's a contract research organization. So people need to understand when the FDA does trials, they subcontract to organizations in the United States to test the subjects. And what they found just in this whistleblower's documents was that they had over 1,000 people that were enlisted in the study, and over 477 of them had COVID-19 during the trial period, never got tested with a PCR test. She also says that people were coached to change their adverse events in their diaries on what to write and what not to write. And it goes on to explain that when people were being injected, the subject matters were being injected, they unblinded them. So they put their profiles in for the researchers to see. So then they could also cover up whether or not these people had adverse events. Despite that, if you go into the FDA documents without that whistleblower's documents, you'll find that over 407 patients who were vaccinated came down with COVID-19, or what they call suspect COVID-19, versus 289 in the placebo group. And they came down with it, Stu, within a week after the first or second dose. And they define COVID-19 not just as the mild or moderate symptoms. They define it as severe liver, kidney, and neurological disorders. They define it as death and ICU admissions. So there could have been 407 people that experienced any one of those from the injections, and they never reported it. And in the FDA document, they specifically say this could be attributed to the vaccines. They call it reactogenicity from the vaccine. So they say the side effects of the vaccines overlap directly with COVID-19.
So how many times could this be multiplied? I mean, we're talking about 400 and some odd numbers here, relatively small. They all do count and we care. But how exponential do you think that this really is? I mean, when we're looking at, for example, the vaccine adverse events reporting system, which we know to be unreliable, only reporting as little as 1% of adverse events, or what I call intended consequences, as a result of these shots being falsely referred to as vaccines, how big do you think the numbers really are?
Let's go back to the Mantavia data, where they said 477 had COVID-19 and were never tested. They had about 1,000 people in the study. 50% would have been injected. 50% would have been placebo. So that is a 100% serious adverse event rate.
So when we know people who have been inoculated and we don't see them experiencing adverse events, intended consequences, side effects, injury, death, paralysis, Guillain-Barré, feeding tubes, what do we do? What are we to assume is going on with these people?
They didn't get the 30 micrograms of the mRNA. They got maybe a placebo. They maybe got 10 micrograms of mRNA. That would be a reasonable hypothesis to come across, to develop.
Now, this whole thing is based on PCR tests. This whole pandemic has been based on a failed test that has actually been recalled by the CDC, is no longer going to be used, I believe, after what, the first of the year?
Yeah, the first of the year. Yeah. And that's a major problem, too, because the declaration, the reason why we're in this nightmare, this is really important, is January 27th of last year, Secretary Azar from HHS said that because of confirmed cases in the United States, COVID-19 was a public health threat and a threat to national security. We didn't have a test, Stu, in January of last year. We didn't have one in February. We didn't have one in March. So that declaration in and of itself is an issue because it was based on confirmed tests. Now they've changed it. The last declaration on October 18th from Becerra says it's based on COVID-19. Here's the problem with that. Regarding the test, the last study from the CDC, the Morbidity Mortality Weekly Report, they show people in the hospital with COVID-19, only 5 to 10% test positive for SARS-CoV-2 or the Delta variant. That data also shows if you have a PCR test and it has over a 90% failure rate in diagnosing people who are so symptomatic they're hospitalized, there's no attribution. There never was attribution between the virus and COVID-19. And now Secretary Becerra has said, no, COVID-19 is the cause of the public health emergency and threat to national security. This is a problem because COVID-19 is a disease that's so severe, it can cause symptoms across every system in your body, neurological, cardiovascular, pulmonary, kidneys, liver, circulatory, you name it. It's also so deadly or contagious that you could possibly have no symptoms at all and be perfectly healthy, like my son. COVID-19 is literally defining you as a human being who is alive. The virus apparently are humans, because if you're alive, you're at risk. for infecting other people or from dying from COVID-19. The whole thing has been nothing more than a psyop. And if you look at the data, it clearly shows that. If you have over a 90% failure rate from a PCR test, there's no correlation between the virus and COVID-19. And if you can have COVID-19 and be in the hospital and dying from respiratory or heart failure, or you could be a perfectly healthy 17-year-old teenage boy who can run a 6-minute mile, what does that tell you about COVID-19, Stu?
Okay, so if the whole thing is a psyop, the psyop then you're suggesting was intended to bring in the bioweapon, which is these shots, right?
That's right. And the whole thing is a psyop because what they're saying is COVID-19 is a threat to national security. Well, here's my question. There's a vaccine mandate. You had people on this week talking about it. If the vaccine mandate is going to make 200,000 enlisted men and women resign and another 176,000 who are in the reserves or contracted resign, so we're going to lose almost 400,000 people in our military. Is the COVID-19 a threat to national security? Or is it our government making a mandate? If there's a mandate for everyone that has an employed in the United States for over 100 employees, we're going to lose 84 million more jobs to an already crippled economy. Does that make COVID-19 the threat to national security? Or does that make the government, who's making a mandate, we're going to lose 84 million jobs, the threat to national security?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is really obvious. And we spoke with Maddie earlier, who was a 13-year-old that has been tragically permanently disabled and injured due to the vaccine trial that she participated in with Pfizer, your former employee. We have the media here who is completely ignoring, with the exception of Laura Ingraham, who snuck a panel in against the better judgment, I guess you could say, or against the wishes of Fox Corporate. She snuck a panel in. I hope she's not in hot water over there at Fox. But other than that, the mainstream media has been completely silent on all of this, including somebody who has access to the media whenever he wants it, which is President Trump. What is your theory on his silence on these adverse events and acknowledging that these shots are dangerous and in many cases deadly?
That's a great question that's been on the hearts and minds of many patriots. Why hasn't Trump come out and said, these vaccines are dangerous? We know that they're dangerous now. The evidence is irrefutable. And to that, I would answer that last year it was irrefutable that hydroxychloroquine was effective treatment and prevention for COVID-19, which President Trump declared. I would add that he had a press conference with his team where they showed the evidence that 80 degree weather kills the virus, that sunlight kills the virus. It's not that infectious. He had a press conference where he said the solution cannot be worse than the disease. And he told the governors to open up their states. He refuses to keep the country further locked down. And what did America do? The mainstream media turned on him. He said that this was a bioweapon, right? He said this was the Wuhan virus, the China virus, and everyone called him a xenophobe. And everyone on, even the patriots, us, myself included, did we rally and fight to defend President Trump? No. I'm speaking on my behalf and what I observed from others, right? We agreed with President Trump, but were we vocal about it? Or did we just want that participation trophy because we voted for him? But did we actually rally and say President Trump is right? The evidence he's showing is irrefutable. Or did we go along? Were we being nice?
Well, I mean, I think that we have been very adamant about exposing that there are real treatments to this product that's being branded as COVID-19. But specifically as to why doesn't President Trump come out and acknowledge the adverse events on this vaccine? And if you're going to give me because the media is going to persecute him. Well, that's something that they have done since he came down the escalator, isn't it?
It is, but we're doing this now. We have the courage now. We're starting to fight now. But what did happen last year when he did all these things, when he came out and said this stuff? The media turned on him, and so did the American people. We did not fight and we did not rally with him. We wanted a participation trophy. We were very quiet. The Patriots were very quiet. We were about this whole pandemic. We wore our masks. We weren't rallying against this. We shut down our businesses. We followed our governors. We didn't follow our president.
So what are you suggesting that President Trump does or not do? I've got about a minute left here.
Oh, in regards to the, I think what this goes back to is what I was just saying right before, which is all of this is an act of war. Everything that's going on with COVID-19 has been an act of war against the American people, including the theft of the election. Those who are in power now were not put in power by the American people. They were put in power by an enemy state. That is what's going on right now. In regards to President Trump, I mean, should he come forward and say the vaccines are dangerous? Well, if you take a look at this from a behavioral insights, psychological warfare, based on history, it doesn't look like that would actually achieve anything. The American people need to come forward and say this, Stu. That's my point. We need to fight to win. It's not up to Trump to save this country. It's up to us to save the country.
That I agree with 100%. However, psychologically, he does hold sway over at least 100 million people in this country and others around the world. So his acknowledgement would have an impact, in my opinion.
I had thought about that as well, but these people, are they psychologically strong enough to then, you know, when Trump's attacked by the media and they're saying, no, there is no evidence that these vaccines are dangerous because they're sticking to their lie. Okay. They're sticking to their lie. Are they going to rally and fight behind Trump and fight for America?
I guess I don't know.
We need to Trump and start fighting to win before we expect someone to come in and quote unquote save us.
I agree. Nobody's going to do that. We need to step up and do this ourselves. And facing the truth oftentimes is not very comfortable. And trusting in the people that you thought you previously could trust in, you may, when using your discernment and actually looking at the truth and the facts for what they are, you may find that those people are not as trustworthy as you once thought that they were. Matt Gaetz, a perfect example. Marjorie Taylor Greene, another example. I'll never apologize for holding these people accountable. They have deceived. They have pulled the wool over the eyes of people who previously celebrated them as being prolific fighters. And indeed, they are not. Karen Kingston, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu.
All right, I want to talk to you about the group Vaccine Police, founded by Christopher Key. Christopher Key is the guy who's confronting these petty tyrants. For example, the ones that preside over your children sitting on some school board using some imaginary, fictitious statute, some authority to strap up oxygen-inhibiting medical devices to the faces of your children all day long while we just roll over and allow it to happen. Now, those same petty tyrants no doubt will get millions of dollars in federal money if they enforce vaccine mandates on your children, so that you can roll the dice, just like what happened with Maddie and just like what Karen is talking about here, with 100% adverse event rates. Sound like a good idea? Probably not. Well, the Vaccine Police is exposing all this. They're putting up billboards. They're video documenting everything that they do, serving Nuremberg notifications on pharmacists, confronting big pharma CEOs and executives, exposing these school boards and hospital administrators, documenting it all, getting it out to the masses. This is really important. This is boots on the ground action by a true patriot called Christopher Key. I hope that you will support him. Go to vaccine-police.com. I support him, and I'm glad that I do. I'm going to continue to support this group. Go to vaccine-police.com. If you feel so called and you have the resources, give them $1, $5, $5,000, or $5 million, whatever you have that you can give to this organization. I trust this organization, and I see the fruits of that labor. Go to vaccine-police.com. Check out the fruits for yourself. And if you have the time and the resources and the will, please donate if you can. Vaccine-police.com. Well, one of the largest investment firms in the world is implementing a system of segregation or discrimination on grounds of race. From now on, at State Street Global Advisors, hiring managers will have to ask permission before they're allowed to hire white men, just white men. Not only that, but executives will actually be punished if they don't make adequate progress on diversity metrics and don't hire enough people simply for having brown skin or female genitalia. And don't count on hearing much protest against this from Republicans. Most of them are totally on board with blatant discrimination against Americans and against their own voters. Even in the GOP, anti-white male discrimination is something that they accept every single day. It's one reason that they'll try to shove awful presidential candidates like Nikki Haley down our throats in 2024. Or how about getting behind and pushing gubernatorial candidate Vernon Jones, the confirmed anti-white racist parasite in Georgia? Bobby Payton is running for U.S. Senate in Illinois. Now, he says that this goes much further than one investment fund implementing reverse Jim Crow. He says that State Street and similar companies like BlackRock are using their massive assets and the passivity of their own investors to impose wokeness on corporations around the globe. Bobby Payton, as a side note, also runs his own investment firm, Preactive Investments, and he says that white men should feel free to contact him for a job at any time. Bobby Payton joins us now. How deep does this go?
Well, so over the past 20 to 30 years, BlackRock and State Street have made an absolute fortune getting everybody to move their money from active managers into passive ETF funds, like spider funds, the QQQ, and other types of index instruments, where, you know, the saying was, nobody knows what's going to happen, so just buy the market. And as we all know, you would never go into a neighborhood and just buy whatever the price of a house was. You should kick the tires and look at it. We've been conditioned to just blindly just buy and buy the dips and just buy at all costs. And this is why the markets are so massively distorted. But the really big distortion we're seeing come to roost right now, which is these companies have so much power because nobody votes anymore. Like in the movie Wall Street, remember the shareholder meeting? People would show up to vote.
Yeah.
Well, people aren't voting on behalf of their money anymore. They let some peons in these ETF companies vote on their behalf, and they install people that do what they want. And, you know, BlackRock has $9 trillion now, almost half the size of the U.S. economy, you know, in assets under management. Now, keep in mind, they had less than $1 billion about 35 years ago, under a billion. So it's gone up basically 9,000-fold. That just gives you one example. And so this is why we see this insanity across all of these companies, where we're like, this makes no sense. How are these people running their business with no regard for the customer? Well, because there's a small little group of people at BlackRock and at State Street that think they should play God, and they should dictate what we do. And by the way, I know I do run a management firm that invests in individual securities, but I prefer to get into the United States Senate and make this type of nonsense. I would end it. I would say, no, you cannot vote the shareholders' votes anymore. The shareholders have to vote them. You do not. You cannot outsource that. I would try to put it back onto the investors, so that the investors become aware and become active capital holders once again. And in the meantime, I think they should seriously consider taking their business elsewhere if these companies do not share their values and beliefs.
What do you suggest that investors do with this information?
Well, the most important thing to do right now is ask yourself a question, especially if you have children or you have grandchildren. Do you want these companies to treat your children in a manner that is outright discriminatory? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, then you owe it to your children and your grandchildren to find somebody who doesn't do this to them, and find other investment managers. You could always contact me, but go find somebody that doesn't do this follow this insanity. And I think that if, you know, on an individual level, each person doing this, if millions of Americans start to do this, we'll strip away this excessive power and frankly, this abuse of power by these, let's call them what they are, they're oligarchs. We have oligarchy on U.S. soil, folks. And they call the shots on the executive board of who's on the executive board across this country. Keep in mind, before, an activist investor only needed to get 5% of the shares to get a board seat. Well, now BlackRock, State Street, these other companies, they have 5, 10, 15% of shares. So they might have 1, 2, 3 board seats. But guess what? They got $9 trillion behind them to cause some pain.
Okay, so you run your own investment firm. And this is your advice to investors. Now, as a U.S. Senate candidate, because that's the ultimate goal here, is to get you there. As a U.S. Senate candidate, don't you think that the same rules, the same advice applies to these mask mandates as well? What if millions of people just say, no, my kid's coming to school and he's not wearing a mask?
Well, first of all, with regards to the mask mandates, I think that this is a violation of our human rights. Like a lot of our experience as human beings and actually enjoying happiness is through being able to see each other's faces and experience the world by seeing emotions.
I agree with that 100%. I mean, removing smiles from the daily lives of our children is going to be detrimentally, it's going to have a negative impact mentally for the rest of their lives. But what about just taking your kids out of school? I mean, they won't get federal grants if you don't have attendance, right? So, I mean, you could punish these people in the same way that you do with BlackRock and these other investment firms. You remove your money from them. You remove the ability for these schools to make money as well. Just pull them out.
Yeah. So my big thing is to, number one, abolish the Department of Education on the federal level. It spends about $60 billion a year, $100 per month for 50 million students in K through 12. We should put all that money back into the hands of the parents. And those people that work for the federal government, they should try to get a job like the rest of us, where they create value either through state or local financing of education. Now, in terms of on the school system of the United States, the money should follow the student. And since we, the people, own these buildings, these schools, I would set them up to make them cafeteria style. I would allow competing school systems to use the space, and they can literally market to each of the parents and say, hey, I have a Montessori program. By the way, you know, you're getting a check, you know, for, you know, you're entitled to this much per your state to follow your child. And we would love to have you here in this Montessori school. By the way, it's in the same building. We took three rooms because it's a supply and demand system. Not any different than a food court. I would make it an educational court to make this transition away from this lunacy of the lunatic left and these communist infiltrated school unions. We got to strip the power away from the administrators. I think Ed for Red should be Red Ed should be dead. We should rehashtag it. Red Ed is dead. And we need to get rid of this nonsense. We own the buildings. The money should follow the parents and their children. And then everybody else, they got to create value or they're out of a job. No more of the secure employment when you keep making, you don't listen to your customer. You don't have a right to get their money. I have five children, Stu, as you know, and this issue really bothers me tremendously because I don't think I should be paying all these property taxes and then try to find a private school and then to have the governor of Illinois try to say that my child needs to be masked so that then I need to possibly figure out about hiring a private tutor. This is insane. This is beyond insane at this point. These people need to be arrested. I mean, for violating the Constitution so blatantly. And I think that the parents of this country, I think they should just say enough and go literally sit at the school board meetings until these sons of bitches resign. Sorry about the cursing.
That's all right. I have 1 minute left, and I got to get this question out because I have 1 minute left. Okay, so you mentioned arrests, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, in a one-word answer, should Fauci be arrested?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Fauci should be arrested. Now, you've got Rand Paul, who seems to be a very prolific fighter, okay, for our own bodily autonomy, and he's going after Fauci. He's going after him hard. Viral videos, big donate here buttons right below him. You can see them. Marjorie Taylor Greene, same thing. There's a lot of people up there grandstanding about Fauci. They're telling us right now that they have met a barrier. They've done all that they can do to arrest Fauci. Do you agree with that sentiment, or is there something that these senators or congressional people, is there something that our lawmakers can do right now to indict or arrest this guy?
Well, if they say they're hitting a barrier, then my attitude is show some leadership and get a national petition going to literally have him arrested for crimes against humanity. Go pull the language and try him under that. Arrest him under that. Have him prove that he didn't commit crimes against humanity. But I think that the public is behind Fauci being arrested. And the fact that they're not willing to take, I guess, the political hit, maybe they want to get reelected or something, I think is a bunch of nonsense. Figure it out. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a war crime. Get our damn military involved if we have to. Find out what manner and what way do we get the military involved if there's a war criminal walking around freely on U.S. soil.
Amen. Bobby Payton, he's running for Senate in Illinois. You can find him directly fund him directly. Give him $5,000 if you can. Go to BobbyPyton.com. Bobby, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Stu. God bless.
All right. I want you to go to steponsocks.com right now. Steponsocks.com. I have told you a lot about the great product line there. The great socks, the red pills, the great gift ideas. The classic version, Obama, Clinton, Fauci, Gates, Pelosi, Biden, stepping on these snakes gives you a great sense of satisfaction. I've told you about the other versions of socks, including my favorite, the Trust in God sock, as well as the Free Our Kids sock, newly available at steponsocks.com. I've told you about the silver available, precious metals, at steponsocks.com. I've told you about the Trump One flags and the Second Amendment support flags. But I haven't told you a whole lot about the owners, the founders at steponsocks.com, who I credit in large part to keeping the Stu Peters Show on the air. They have been here since virtually the beginning. So when the Daily Beast and Will Sommer want to know who funds the Stu Peters Show so they can try to flip the switch and cancel us, they can't do it. Why? Because we're supported by patriots and we support them. Small businesses, patriot owned. One of the founders there was a doctor in New York. She saw the medical tyranny coming and she left, gave up. Believe me, a doctor in New York makes a very comfortable living. But that inspired her to start steponsocks.com. So there's a little example, a little insight into who it is that you're doing business with when you go to steponsocks.com. Check out the socks, check out the silver, check out the flags and all of the other products, and make sure that you mention Stu Peters when you go to steponsocks.com. Well, rumors about California Governor Gavin Newsom have been floating around on social media, suggesting that the most notorious gangster in the desert has suffered an injury from his recent Moderna booster, with symptoms suffered similarly by Guillain-Barré patients. We even noticed a condolences tweet from the mRNA inventor himself, Dr. Robert Malone. Now, the tweet was later deleted, but the suspicions remain, as the West Coast tyrant that wants to jab every Golden State child has been dubiously absent. Now, if you believe Real Raw News, that's because the autocrat has been arrested. He's on his way to Gitmo to meet his maker, in a similar fashion to how that reliable news source depicts Adam Schiff died after he was convicted in that secret court. But for a more sensible report, we'll check in with Edward Zoll, who's been all over this. Edward joins us now. So what do we know about the rumors relating to Gavin Newsom and his booster shot reaction?
Well, Stu, what we know is that he hasn't held a public event since his very public vaccination with the Moderna booster shot. This is on October 27th. As you see here on screen, he is flexing. He's a strong governor. There's been no public events where press can ask questions since this shot. Now, we also know that he canceled his trip to Glasgow, Scotland. Now, this is for the 2021 UN Climate Conference, COP26. But he sent his lieutenant governor instead, Lieutenant Governor Kanalkis. This is what she said about the governor's absence.
It's unfortunate that he couldn't make it. You know, the governor has a young family. I think it's really important for everyone to understand that when you've got young kids, it's sometimes hard to be able to come halfway around the world. But at the same time, I will also just assure everyone that California's face is very visible.
Now, still, we also know that his wife, Jennifer, she tweeted a little bit of a rant and then deleted that rant. But that rant included a little bit more of the excuses. She said that maybe he's just in the office working, maybe home with family, watching kids, playing sports, or dining with his wife. Now, it's interesting she deleted that tweet. You think it'd be something you'd leave up, but maybe someone told her, don't say an official statement just yet, because it might be contradicted later by other facts. Now, we also know that he was at a wedding inside San Francisco's City Hall, which he was almost late to. This is according to Vogue and the reporting that's been done on this event. Now, it was officiated by Nancy Pelosi. It had a very odd dancer, among other things. This is San Francisco and the Democrats holding this wedding in conjunction with the Gettys. Now, the Stu Peters Show was able to find pictures of what appeared to be him and his wife. Now, here they are right here. You'll see it. They're right there, zoomed in. Now, they're masked. If this is him, he's masked, but others around him aren't. It's kind of odd, but maybe he's afraid there'll be a similar event like it happened at the French Laundry, the restaurant that he got caught at and almost lost his governorship over. Now, according to the San Francisco Examiner, Governor Newsom quickly skipped out of the wedding and did not go to the glitzy after party. Should we read into that? I don't know yet, but that's a fact. Other guests went to the wedding and then went to the party. Governor Newsom left and again was wearing the mask the entire time. She couldn't see his face. Now, the governor's spokesman, Daniel Lopez, who I called this morning, didn't get a call back. He said that the governor was at the state capitol last week working with lawmakers. He said he's been keeping a low profile, but it was not due to vaccine injury. Now, his spokesman brought up the subject of vaccine injury. Now, according to the governor's office, he will be live streaming an event today at the California Economic Summit. It's going to be a fireside chat. We'll again provide that video when we have it. But as of the recording of this, we're told he's going to be public. And I'm sure the whole world will see if he does show up with a mask, without it, or without any symptoms. Now, the LA Times reporter that covered this, and also I got a chance to speak to him today. He was a man who was actually in the pool for the governor. He covers the governor's office for the Los Angeles Times. Now, what he told me was that the governor's office has made clear there'll be no questions at this event. The reporters can show up, but they will not get to ask the governor any questions about where he's been or if, again, he's been injured by the Moderna booster shot. Now, on the rumor, these are the facts. RFK Jr.'s ChildrensHealthDefense.org reported last night, and their site was crashing from the amount of traffic this was getting. But this is what they said. They were told, according to a source close to the governor, that he'd experienced an adverse reaction to the Moderna shot. Now, they said specifically that Newsom's symptoms were similar to those associated with Guillain-Barré syndrome. Now, Guillain-Barré syndrome is a neurological disorder where the immune system attacks the nervous system of an individual. You know, your body starts thinking your nervous system is the enemy. It starts messing up certain joints and other things. Your nervous system, you have twitches, paralysis, breathing problems. These things are very apparent if you develop it. You can recover. This is according to some of the doctors that I spoke to today. Now, Steve Kirsch was the other source behind the rumor that was circulating. He's the executive director for the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. Now, on his Substack, he quoted three sources. He said they all were friends who know the Newsoms. Now, he said that they had a soft confirmation from one who absolutely knows him and acted consistent with the hypothesis that he has Bell's palsy. Now, he said that two lawyers he spoke to, this is Steve Kirsch, executive director of the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, said two lawyers he spoke to said that he had developed something very close to Guillain-Barré, GBS. And specifically, one lawyer spoke to two other friends. This is, you know, third hand, second hand, but this is what the rumor was based on. They said the friends also knew that Gavin Newsom had experienced side effects, specifically was experiencing symptoms related to Guillain-Barré syndrome. Now, a neurologist that spoke to Mr. Kirsch today, upon the announcement that Governor Newsom is doing this public event, said that if he got steroids and he got Botox, that the treatment, if given immediately, would allow him to present publicly as if nothing had happened. You wouldn't see impact of it. You wouldn't be able to tell that he was potentially sick before he'd experienced an adverse reaction. This is from a neurologist quoted by Steve Kirsch. Now, why this is important is obviously the governor, Governor Newsom, in this case, has been at the forefront. He's been a spokesman for the vaccines and specifically for the kids, getting kids the shots. It's the way to solve the pandemic, not just for California, but for the world. This, according to Governor Newsom. If you'll remember, the subject of Bell's palsy and Guillain-Barré, this has come up before, but in Australia, there was a health minister in Australia named Victor Dominello. This is in New South Wales, a province in Australia. Do you remember him getting the shot publicly? And then during a live press conference in August of this year, him developing symptoms. Symptoms. Look at it right here. His face started drooping. This they couldn't cover up, so they eventually said, yes, yes, he's developed Bell's palsy. Now, on the subject of the governor and these statements have been putting around, RFK Jr., you know, the site that initially made the speculation and the claim about the side effect, he sent a statement that he prays for the Newsom family, and he's wishing for a quick recovery. He said, if it's true the governor suffered debilitating neurological injuries following vaccination, it raises grave ethical questions about his seemingly dishonest effort to conceal his injuries while implementing aggressive policies to force the children and working people of California to endure similar risk. Well, I would agree with that statement. That's a very strong statement. Again, we don't know if Gavin Newsom has actually been injured, But if he has, he has a responsibility to be honest, not just as an elected official, but as a leader, as a person. Don't put onto others, which they could be hurt too. We pray that Governor Newsom is not hurt. We pray that if he has been impacted, his heart would change. And we pray for the children of California and those around the world who are being intimidated and some forced into these COVID shots and are getting hurt. It's real. It's not a conspiracy theory. Reporting for the Stu Peters Show, I'm Edward Saul.
Okay, if you like exclusive behind-the-scenes content and extended interviews, sign up for premium. Go to redvoicemedia.com/premium. Again, redvoicemedia.com/premium. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. God bless you.